Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Sport Diehards here on Radio AFS. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz, RadioAFS.com, Facebook.com/RadioAFS. I tried to play the motivational Sport Diehards opener for you right now by Van Halen, but it wasn't playing. Oh, here we go. The following is an inspirational message as delivered to you by Steve Itzkowitz of Sport Diehards. Sometimes you just gotta let things go and understand that with every passing day, things are getting better and they're getting worse. Some things are going right, some things are going wrong, some things are stagnant. That's why the Sport Diehards is here. Inspire you to promote thoughts in your mind, to promote joy in your heart, to give you the strength that you can get back and let you do it every day. Keep up on the sports topic that matters. That's the sports topic, because as I told you before, sports is not just Cans Complaints. We'll be talking about that, as well as a new nickname that I have for Cam Newton. We'll be talking about what's with all the ties in the NFL. Yeah, we're starting to see ties in the NFL much more frequently than we're used to. A lot of people are up in arms. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the biggest danger facing the Cleveland Indians as they try to put away the Cubs tomorrow night to wrap up their first World Series in 68 long years. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about a top four Western Conference team that should win the NBA championship this year. And what happens if they don't? We're going to talk about that. We've got it all. NFL, baseball, NBA, the Sport Diehards for 60 minutes. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz. This show is being brought to you by Gallagher's Pub and Grill, the most diehard-friendly sports bar in the world. Don't believe me? Stop in on Sunday, ask for Kieran, and you'll see exactly what I mean. Because at Gallagher's, I guarantee you, you will enjoy good food, make fast friends, and watch your favorite team on high-definition TV. What's with all the ties in the NFL? We've had two so far this year. Blade of which came yesterday. That's the first time since 1997 that there have been two ties in the NFL. And people are up in arms about it because it's not something that we're used to. This was not how the script was written. This is the danger of having preconceived expectations, by the way, because as I mentioned on the show several times, when you have preconceived expectations, you're essentially saying that you know what's going to happen and can have those expectations, but you don't. What's happening with ties in the NFL right now, quite frankly, makes a lot of sense to me for the following reasons. One, there's a whole lot of mediocrity in the NFL right now. You know what mediocre teams don't do? Close games well. Look at our NFC Championship matchup from last year, the Cardinals, the Arizona Cardinals, and the Carolina Panthers. Neither one of those teams has a 500 record right now. Sorely disappointing. Because of their quarterback play, Carson Palmer being a shell of himself, and Cam Newton coming off his best year with one of his worst years, and one of those years where he can't stop talking, more on that momentarily. But there's also a lot of mediocrity around the league because of the quarterback-driven league. We only have a few quarterbacks that are really worthy of carrying a quarterback-driven league. Most of the teams right now with their quarterback play, quite frankly, can't cut it. So when you have mediocre quarterback play, it's going to be hard for you to close out games. Even Andrew Luck, by all accounts, is having a mediocre year. You also have conservative head coaches, not named Bill Parcells, who typically go by conventional wisdom, going for field goals when they should be going for touchdowns, or going for tons or doing fakes when they should be going and putting points on the board to give themselves a halftime lead. Jeff Fisher, for example, against the Buffalo Bills and the Rams a few weeks ago. There's a whole lot of reasons why ties happen in the NFL. I just gave you a few of them. Conservative head coaches, mediocre at best quarterback play. Not to mention the fact that how many great offensive lines do we have in the NFL right now? One, as many as I can count on one hand. Because the offensive lines right now in the NFL, for the most part, are in shambles. And part of the reason for that is because in the offseason, they can't make contact with each other. There is much less contact in these practices and these OTAs than there ever has been. So these guys come into the season not quite ready to take the contact to the face. Football's a contact sport. I know the league is trying to make it safer. I'm going to coincide this little rant here with a rant about what the NFL trying to, what has happened to the NFL as it tries to make the league safer and more appealing to young people coming up the pipe so their mothers will let them play football. Fact of the matter is the mother shouldn't let any kid play football because what the NFL is doing is it changed the fact that a lot of teams are going to get hit. A lot of players are going to get hit, and there's still going to be a lot of injuries. So if you are dead set against your kids playing football, the NFL really can't do anything to make the game safer. The game is about as safe as it's going to be given the physical sport that it is, given the heavy contact sport that it is. It's not going to get any safer. It may look that way, but I'm telling you right now, what you look at is not often what you see. The NFL is a violent, physical game. Always has been, always will be. But with the shoddy play of the offensive line, for the most part in this league, mediocre quarterback play, conservative coaches, and a whole lot of mediocre teams that don't know how to close out football games, this is what you're going to get. I would get used to ties in the NFL, and by the way, ties are okay. Well, who wins? Well, the networks do. You as a fan do, getting to see something you don't get to see very often. We're looking for something fresh. This is fresh stuff. Now, it might have never been fresh stuff that we ordered off the menu, but it's still fresh. It's kind of exciting. It's interesting. And isn't that what we all want? Interesting? Listen, if we don't want interesting, then let's just declare we don't want interesting. We want everything to be right and perfect. But we don't get everything right. As a matter of fact, most of the time we get it wrong. And we're certainly not perfect. Ties are interesting. It's interesting seeing the mediocre play of the NFL right now because the NFL still dominates the country this time of the year. No matter what, until the other sports leagues figure out what the NFL has figured out, the NBA, Major League Baseball, and yes, Major League Baseball did outdo Sunday Night Football during the World Series. And that might happen again next year if you get an historical matchup like you get, like you're getting in this World Series. But that was an aberration more than it is something that we should get used to. We should get used to ties in the NFL, though. Until teams play better, until quarterbacks play better, until teams learn how to close, until offensive linemen can be prepared for the physical play that they will endure during the season. The way you practice is typically the way you play. Every coach says that, and it's true. Yet the way these teams are practicing in the offseason does not match how they play in the regular season. Is it any wonder why the NFL and why these teams are as mediocre as they are? Because the most important time for them, the offseason, where they get prepared for what the regular season is going to be like, has been completely stilted by the NFL's attempt to water down this game for the purposes of making it safe so that moms will allow their kids to play football and potentially pursue a career in the NFL. I will guarantee you this, the NFL is not going anywhere. There might come a time in this country, and I think it's going to happen, where the NFL is not flying high as it's been for the last 25 years. Since I graduated from high school, that's how far the NFL has come, and that's how high the NFL is on top of every other sports league and just about any other organization in this country. But That's not going to mean that kids aren't going to play football anymore. They will. Because football in this country encompasses everything about this country. Everything. So the NFL can continue to nurture two women, and that's fine. Love the fact that more women are involved in this game than there ever has been. I think it's great. And I love the fact that they're trying to make the game safer. But the fact of the matter is, it's not safer. If anything, it's more dangerous. Because look at all the injuries we're seeing in the last couple of years. Look at all the great players that are going down. Look at all the mediocrity. Mediocrity leads to injuries. Therefore, the game's not safer. It's just different. It's watered down. It's one-dimensional. It's all about quarterbacks, 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 quarterbacks. Everywhere you look, quarterbacks. Most important position in sports. If the most important position, that's debatable. It's debatable. It is. The most important thing in sports is how unifying it is for so many people in this country. That's the most important thing about sports, not quarterbacks. No, not even close. If quarterback is the most important thing, then you are de-emphasizing the importance of everything else. And that's what the NFL has done. It's not good for the product. It's not hurting the league right now, that's for sure. Not yet, anyway. Ties in the NFL are aligned with what the NFL is right now. Mediocre teams that can't close games. Mediocre quarterback play. Poor offensive line play. Conservative coaching. It is what it is. But you're still going to watch, right? You're not going to miss these games. Because you don't know what's going to happen next. Which is why having expectations of what you think is going to happen, no. Don't expect anything out of the NFL anymore. Just watch the games and accept how it is. Whether it's a tie, whether it's a blowout, whether it's a close game. Because I'm telling you right now, it's not going to change much. Not with the league basically selling out to one position. And that's okay, by the way. If the NFL can have a mediocre product and still make as much money as it is, God bless the NFL. Because they've earned the right to get a little bit lazy. They've earned the right to kind of make it up as they go along. They've earned that right. They've achieved their greatness. We all do it in this country. We become successful. We get soft. The NFL's gotten a little bit soft. Gotten soft on quarterbacks. And that's okay. But then, is okay good enough? Is mediocrity good enough? We'll see. For right now, the NFL has nothing to worry about. Because it's still going to be talked about. It's still going to be watched. It's still going to be scrutinized. It is still going to be demanded. So get used to these ties. Because they're not going anywhere. They're going to happen more and more and more. And understand that the NFL's attempts to make the game safer, to make the game more appealing to young kids that are playing Pop Warner football, the high school football, then college, and then the pros. Yeah, some moms will keep their kids out of football, but there's a whole lot of moms we're not going to hear from saying the same thing. Football's not going anywhere, the NFL's not going anywhere. So the mediocrity can continue because, quite frankly, they have earned that. And what a weird thing to say that you've earned mediocrity, but that's what they've earned. Who does it suck for? It sucks for us fans, us media that has to watch these games or read about them. That's why the storylines are so important. And so many storylines coming out of the NFL, as we have crossed the halfway mark of the season. One of which is Cam's complaints. It's a new sideshow in the NFL. It happens every single week, just like a football game where Cam Newton complains about something. I'm going to react next to his latest complaints. And I'm going to talk about why he has a point and why it doesn't matter. You're listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS or RadioAFS.com. Listen to Handcuffed by Tesla and don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody.
Who's nobody to the field from the tailgate party. SFC, yeah, we still G's, but we crushing and hitting every damn thing. If it ain't real, it ain't right. If you can't take a hit, take a hike. The legendary Super Bowl champ said right. A classic connection, Montana to Rice. Field motor section, mission to Diamond Heights. Bayview District, Sunday and Monday nights. That's ball. If the Niners on y'all, that's the right call. I got one question. Tell them, Harbaugh.
Who got it better than us?
Team in the NFC.
Niners.
Yeah, I see all the haters. I'm Bailey, known for kicking it off like Akers. Follow while I ball like Smith. Justin, Alex, or Alden, take your pick. 49, go time. With a forever faithful, Frank Gore grind. They gon' hit from start to finish. Ain't talking beats and lyrics, I'm talking Bowman and Willis. We ready right now to sit. When Ted starts sprinting, it really is no contention.
Yeah.
San Francisco's on, homegrown, pay reppin' so we can get it on.
Get it on.
We in need of another ring, no restin'. Harbaugh, you got a question?
Welcome back to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. I'm your host, Steve Itzkowitz. Who's got it better than us? Jim Harbaugh, leading a rally kai when he was with the Niners. Where have those days gone? Well, it's 2016-2017. The NBA season has begun, and one thing is clear. And let me preface the following by saying that, as a Laker fan, this is my greatest nightmare, that the Los Angeles Clippers win an NBA championship. No Laker fan wants to see it. I'm one of those Laker fans that doesn't want to see it. But in the interest of being an objective analyst here on the Sports Diehards, I'm going to tell you the truth right now, that the Los Angeles Clippers should win the NBA championship this year. It has to happen this year. It should happen this year. For the following reasons. Number one, four-year core with all the elements that you need. Glenn Doc Rivers, the head coach. Chris Paul, the point guard. J.J. Redick, the shooting guard. Blake Griffin, the small forward. DeAndre Jordan, the center. And Jamal Crawford, your instant offense man, off the bench. Add to it guys like Paul Pierce, you know what it's like. And Maurice Spates from Golden State, a very key pickup for the Clippers this year. The chemistry of this team should not be any better than it's been, should be the best that it's been in this four-year run. And chemistry is huge, as my caller on the line will attest to when I bring him on momentarily. So you have the stability there. Secondly, Golden State looks down right now. Golden State reputationally will make a lot of threes this year, sure. But they're not going to stop anybody defensively. And I'll tell you what, if you're going to win an NBA championship, you better play some kind of defense. That's not going to be Golden State this year. The Clippers, on the other hand, are more than capable of playing really good defense, especially when you consider that Chris Paul is on the perimeter and DeAndre Jordan is manning the paint and J.J. Redick is no slouch defensively himself. Neither is Maurice Spates. So they have enough defense by which to do it this year. Thirdly, Oklahoma City is down and San Antonio, I'm not sure Kawhi Leonard is going to be the guy to lead them to a championship this year. Yeah, San Antonio is San Antonio, and talk about reputation, they have a sterling reputation, deservedly so. But they don't feel as complete as the Clippers do. They don't feel like they have a great team from top to bottom that the Clippers do. So that's another reason. Another reason is that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin are going to be free agents. if you don't win it this year, either one of those guys will leave or both of them will, particularly Chris Paul, who's not getting any younger and wants desperately to know what it's like to play in the Western Conference Finals because he hasn't been there yet. Chris Paul's issue is the Clippers' issue. Neither one of them have ever been in the Western Conference Finals. If that doesn't happen this year, with Golden State being down, San Antonio being great toward the top, but maybe not being the complete team that they've been, not to mention Oklahoma City being down, and I don't think Portland is nearly ready enough. I know Houston is not ready, or Utah, and don't get me started with New Orleans and Anthony Davis, who's playing great so far this year, but when does he get hurt? Because it happens every year. The Clippers have the most complete team from top to bottom right now in the Western Conference, in my opinion. And they're playing very well together, and they're winning tough road games. They're winning Portland to begin the season was no small feat, because that is a nightmare place for most teams to play, much less the Clippers. They have all the ingredients this year. They have the chemistry. As I talked on the show last week, if they don't complain as much to the officials, if they just focus on playing basketball, if they relax, if they allow themselves to be Lob City, like the Lakers were Showtime back in the 80s when they were winning, they weren't complaining to officials. They just worried about taking care of business amongst themselves. If the Clippers focus on just playing basketball and keeping it simple, they have the talent, the organization, the structure, the discipline, and the experience now to go all the way this year. And it has to happen this year, because if it doesn't, it won't happen. Not with this core group. It will get broken up. Doc Rivers will lose one, if not both, of his jobs. And Chris Paul and or Blake Griffin will leave seeking greener pastures in terms of winning a championship. Maybe Chris Paul will join his buddy LeBron James in Cleveland. Let's not forget about the possibility of that. Calling from the line here, a diehard sports radio original. We haven't heard from him in a while. He is the ultimate sports talk radio antagonist, a man who wears many hats. He is a reverend, he is a father, he is a musician, and he's great with the NFL and the NBA. We only have a few minutes here, so I want to get in everything he could say without running out of time before that happens. The big and easy, Mr. E, the big and famous, I should say, Mr. E.B. Simmons. E.B., welcome back to the show. How are you?
Steve, my brother, man, it's good to hear your voice. It's good to hear you still on here talking sports and giving great opinions and great facts, my brother. So I'm very happy for you and very proud of you, my man. So
thank you, sir.
With that being
said, well, you heard my rant, so go and respond. Yeah. We only have a couple minutes here, so go ahead.
With that being said, I'll make it quick. So we're in week one of the NBA season, and if we're gonna grade people at this point of the year on their chances to win a championship, I'd say Oklahoma City doesn't really miss Kevin Durant too much, from what it looks like. But early here in the season, the Clippers are still the Clippers. Make no mistake about it. I totally disagree with that point. I hear what you're saying, but they've had that same group for the last 4 years that has underachieved, and just bad things seem to happen to the Clippers when it counts. Last couple of years, obviously, with Chris Paul having to leave the playoffs, and you know, so it just bad things happen to the Clippers. So the Clippers are the Clippers. They're snake bitten, kind of like the Chargers. You know, I mean, but anyway. So this is Golden State. Are we reading too much into these first three or four games? Absolutely. Our first three games, I'm sorry, absolutely, and I'll tell you why. The Warriors, I predicted this. I didn't get a chance to mention or predict it, but I predicted that
right.
In the first one. Let's look at the season in four quarters. The first quarter, 20 games, I predicted they'd be like 12-8 or 13-7, something like that. Sure, they're right on schedule. They're right on schedule for that. They may even do better than that. They may actually beat that. But I'm thinking they're going to – the last two quarters of the season, maybe the second quarter, they go the same, maybe about – still makes them something like 30-12 at the all-break or something like that. The fact of the matter is that there's going to be a point in the second half of the season in those second, third, and fourth quarters where they may go 19-1. I mean, this is how good that team is offensively. When they get it together, this is going to be their offense. There's going to be a point where these guys score 140 points with no effort at all. And the fact of the matter is that once they figure it out to where with that depth lineup that they're going to call it, brother, you're going to see this team probably win, they win about maybe 60 during the regular season. But come playoffs, mm-hmm. they're going to blow the doors off to San Antonio or Cleveland. And that's what they're going to have. That's when they're going to see their biggest trouble. Outside of that, I'm not worried about Golden State.
Well, here's the thing. It's not so much let's stick on the line here, EV. We're going to go a little over here. I want to ask you about the Chargers, actually, about Mike McCarthy. If you stick on the line here, I don't care. We're going to go over anyways, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. I only do a 60-minute show per week now because of all the other business going on, so we'll talk offline. But it's not so much reading the early games here. I'm not reading the early games. What I'm looking at is the rosters. I've seen the Lakers win enough championships to know that even before the season begins, that they look like a championship team. Now, how they play mm-hmm. during the season, obviously, is very, very subjective. But I can look at a roster, and I can tell when a team has the ingredients to be a championship team, and the Clippers have such a team. Now, I said they should win. I didn't say they will because I fully expect that they won't because they're the Clippers, and they probably have a key injury. They're probably going to screw it up somehow. But they have a team as built that can win a championship this year. And the thing with Golden State, forget what happened against San Antonio in game number one. Golden State right now, one Achilles heel that you know they're going to have all year long is how are they going to keep teams out of the paint? They don't have Bogut back there anymore, Festus Ezeli. They don't have that protection anymore. It's going to put that much more pressure on them defensively on the perimeter to try to keep those guys out. And that's not the kind of player that Steph Curry is. So when I look at how the teams, what the strength of the team is, what the weakness is, the Clippers have a deeper team than Golden State right now, but Golden State is more successful, and they know what it takes, unlike the Clippers. That's why I feel like if the Clippers are going to do it, this is the year to do it because they have the roster and the experience to do it. They can get past Golden State this year. I didn't say they will. I have no idea they will. I assume that they won't because that's just the way it's gone. They just look like a team that should win it this year, at least get into the finals. Does that make sense?
I totally get where you're going with that, but I think that you're really underestimating San Antonio. I mean, you can see right now. My guess would be that Ginobili and Parker end up playing about 60 games this year, and they still be able to win the regular season Western Conference best record. Because the matter is, you see the depth on that team. I mean, man, those guys are like, I saw them take two of their top seven out of their lineup and beat the brakes off of New Orleans the other night. But, I mean, beat the brakes off New Orleans the other night with two guys out of their top seven and on the bench in the streets because they don't want to play. He doesn't pop going to play them more than 60 games. So they're going to be mm-hmm. nice and rested when it comes to playoff time.
All right, I want to ask you about Mike McCoy, and we'll see what happens. Certainly San Antonio under Greg Popovich is a team you could never, ever count out, but it's do or die time for the Clippers, and that's all I know. And so that's
yes,
a challenge
sir.
That I have. Like, can the Clippers get
yes,
to that? It's do or die time for them now. They have a team that should go further than they've gotten this year because the chemistry is better, and it looks like they're maturing as a team. But we'll see what happens. San Antonio, Golden State, Golden State. Those are your top three teams. All right, Mike McCoy of the San Diego Chargers. The Chargers lose another mm-hmm. game yesterday, even though Melvin Gordon single-handedly grinded. I mean, the way he was running yesterday. And then you get to the two-yard line and you go for three straight passing plays. Now, let me preface the same by saying that, I know a head coach wants to keep players happy. But to me, that's mm-hmm. why you have 16 games. If you got something that's working and it's going to lead you to win, why would you go away from it at the two-yard line? It almost reminds me when they didn't hand the ball, Seahawks didn't hand the ball to Marshawn Lynch on second down against the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and we saw what happened after that. Why not go for it and make that team prove they could stop it? Why do you think Mike McCoy decided to go three straight passing plays after Melvin Gordon, with the way Melvin Gordon was running the football yesterday?
Let me say this about San Diego's team and your analysis of Mike McCoy in that situation, basically conceding that the head coach the call in that particular situation. And I'll tell you this.
No,
right
he probably
now.
Didn't.
Yeah. He probably didn't make that call. You know. But
he could override
he rehired.
It.
Yeah. He rehired Ken Wisenhunt this year for a reason because that offense went from mm-hmm. a top three offense in the NFL the last time they went to the playoffs 2 years ago, to being in the doldrums the last two seasons. So I should say 3 seasons ago. But the bottom line is that so he went ahead and allowed Ken Whisenhunt to do what Ken Whisenhunt does. And I think he got cute at the end. And if you remember on that drive, and I was royally pissed off as a Chargers fan as I'm sitting there watching this, and I'm like, why aren't we running the ball on first and second down? There's just no way that we're not at least lining Melvin Gordon up in the backfield with Watt in front of him in an odd formation and running a play-action fake on one of these two first two downs. It makes no sense. But if you remember, Melvin Gordon grinded out about 40, 45 yards on that drive, and he was pretty tired when they got down to towards the goal line. So, and he'd already had a day where he had 26 carries. So, and touches. So he had a pretty workmanlike day. So when they got down to the end, I remember the last time that they did that was when they ran him against the Saints late in that game, and he fumbled the ball. He does have a propensity to fumble the ball. And Denver's got a team full of ball hawks on defense. So when I look at that, my first reaction when I was sitting there watching it with my kids, I was like, I cannot believe this fool's not running the ball. But the bottom line is, when I think about it, I'm like, he got cute and he tried to, and he ended up where if you don't do it on first or second down, you're kind of stuck with passing on third and fourth. So it's like, so the bottom line was, first and second down were questionable. Third and fourth down made sense. I mean, so it's not four straight. It's really the first two downs. What the heck were you doing on first and second down? So, San Diego. So let's get to Mike McCoy. Does Mike McCoy deserve to be fired? This team is playing way over its head right now. I'm talking about all eight games this year, all this 3-5 record that they have, all eight games they played this year, this team has overachieved and played their absolute heart out. And they've lost some games they should have won. They won a couple of games they should have lost. So at the end of the day, this 3-5 record is about what they are. I mean, let's be honest. This is about what they are. When you lose Keenan Allen and Danny Woodhead, and Manti Te'o in the first 2 weeks of the season, you lose those three players. Those are impact players on your team. You miss Joey Bosa, who now, I mean, if I'm seeing this correctly, I mean, this guy looks like the next coming to J.J. Watt. This guy's a beast. So you miss him for the first three games also. You know, you've got injury issues. You got Jason Verrett, who's a Pro Bowl cornerback last year. He's out for the season. You're just completely just decimated with injuries. And this team has been in every single game, this year. So when I look at it, they're about a 3-5, 4-4 football team with these injuries. If this team was healthy and they were 3-5, I'd be calling for Mike McCoy's head just like everybody else. But then it's me to wonder, and this is the last point, and then I want to hear your response because I know I'm talking too much. But then you have the issue of every year they seem to have this problem. Everybody gets hurt. Is there something going on with the strength and conditioning people that he's hired? Because for some reason, ever since he's been here, we lose one of our good players, it seems like, for the season, early in the season, every single year, at least one, two to three players every year, and they are decimated by injuries. So with that being said, and they're asking Phillip Rivers to do so much. So is this a coaching problem, X's and O's, or is this a coaching problem in the off season and in training camp? That's the question I pose.
You know, I think the strength and conditioning coach should probably be hired by the team doctor, to try to keep these guys down and to try to prevent injury. When head coaches hire a strength and conditioning coach, I think you want to have a certain understanding of how the human body works, a little bit about medicine. I don't know how much an NFL head coach would know about that. So I wonder what that process involved, or if the team trainer or the team doctor maybe gets involved in that process, because strength and conditioning goes to helping reduce the chances of injuries. So, but I'm just kind of talking off the top of my head there. The Chargers have lost every game. They've lost by 8 points or less. They've been competitive in every single game. And I know injuries have been a big issue in the last couple of years. But, if they didn't want to run Melvin Gordon, if you got tired in that instance, to make a defense, did you go into by doing something that's called play action, which is something you can utilize coming off a good running play or two, because the defense at that point has got to be thinking run.
So if you play action of Gordon, then roll Rivers out and throw to a tight end. You know, on the other side, what Russell Wilson should have done in that Super Bowl when he faked to Marshawn Lynch and then threw up the middle where Malcolm Butler can pick it off. You could have done that to take advantage of the fact that, you know, Melvin Gordon wasn't able to be stopped. They just went for three straight passing plays at the two-yard line without any cleverness, without any deception behind it like play action can provide. And that's what cost them an opportunity to get more points than they got in that situation and ultimately win that game. So part of it's injuries, but also part of it is not recognizing what you can do to keep a defense off guard if you're not going to run the football straight in that situation for whatever reason. But, you know, in terms of the strength and conditioning coach, yeah, if you have serious injuries every single year that keeps you from advancing as a football team, the head coach has a responsibility for that because he does hire the strength and conditioning coach. So maybe he needs help there to identify somebody that is going to have these guys. And maybe it's also with the NFL right now, there's not much contact that these guys can get in the offseason because of the rules. You know, with OTAs and with preseason limiting practice time and so on and so forth, and then these guys don't come in fully prepared for the physical beating that they are going to take because the physical beating they have to do in the offseason is less now because we're trying to keep players on the field. We're trying to make the game safer. But in effect, that's made the game more dangerous because players don't come into the season as prepared as they could be for the physical beating that they're going to take because of the watered-down aspect of that during the offseason. Does that make sense to you, Evie?
Yeah, it definitely does, Steve. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and as I was saying about the play action, that was definitely something where as you mentioned that was something I said. But yeah, it's that's the problem. That's an X and O problem. I get that. The play action in that situation, the lack thereof, or even a straight run,
yeah.
Or an eye formation. You know, just even a formation,
right,
to throw them off. When you're sitting in a shotgun, you know, 4 downs. With your star running back who's got 100 yards and, you know, and has been a touchdown machine this year in red zone, sitting off to the side, ready to take on blocks instead of being involved in the play, doesn't make any sense. Now, but as far as the conditioning and strength and all that, the question I was posing really about is you know, it still falls on the head coach, but I think I'm a little bit more forgiving of a coach who actually manages a team well. From an X to an O standpoint, and if you have to fire, people that are dealing with the strengthening of the football team and the training staff, if you have to get that situation under control, you know, but you've had now 4 years to do that. So it's kind of like, you know, you see you're having this problem every year. Is there something you can do about it, or is it just bad luck? And if it's bad luck, do I really want that guy around my program? I mean, do I really want to continue on this? On this stroke of bad luck, if you will, if you really believe that's what you believe in. But bottom line is, the good thing about changing coaches when you have a guy like Phillip Rivers is because you know that he's going to adapt to whatever system you bring in. The problem is that if you end up wanting to bring in a coach that doesn't run the type of system that's going to put Phillip Rivers in a position to win, then you're better off trading Phillip Rivers for the last few years of his career to a contender and get yourself some draft picks. And doing, a team that maybe just as a quarterback away from winning, you do that for River at the end of his career, and you help your football team rebuild. There's no sense in continuing to go 4-12, 6-10, 8-8 here and missing the playoffs if you're not rebuilding the franchise. So at this point, you're wasting the Rivers' good years. As a fan of Rivers, particularly, and the Chargers, it may be time to part ways with the man. We can't put a winning product around.
Well, if it's injuries and he comes back next year, but sooner or later you've got to see how a team plays even when there's injuries. It's a 53-man roster. It's not 22. You know, you have 22 players. You know, 11 on offense, 11 on defense. It's a 53-man roster. You've got to look at the general manager and how he assembles a roster and the head coach. It can't just be injuries. Usually there's a couple of reasons why teams fail to make the playoffs year in and year out. Injuries may be a part of it, but there's usually other reasons as well. Maybe the other reason is that the head coach with the personnel as assembled just isn't a match. So we will see what happens. Evie, I really appreciate you coming on here. Great talking with you.
Thanks for having us.
We broadcast every Monday from 7:30 to 8:30. I do a 60-minute show, a little bit easier. So I'd love to have you back maybe a little bit earlier so you can spread off a little bit more. So I'll send you some messages. In the meantime, thank you very much for coming on here, and I hope everything is going well up there in the North Central Valley there.
My pleasure, my brother. We'll be talking soon, I'm sure, and I'll give you a call back in the coming weeks. And great show today.
Sounds good. That's the big and famous Mr. E.B. Simmons, a Dire Sports Radio original, making his debut appearance on the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. We are out of here. We're at a little bit over here, but so what? We're talking sports, and we're having fun, and we're doing it for you. Thank you for listening to Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. Check out the Fallout Shelter tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. with my man A-Bomb, and Fridays, the Beating Drum with Farmer Jacob. You've been listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS, being brought to you by Gallagher's, reminding you that sports is not just an industry, it's a way of life, and I'm out.